Welcome into ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM. This Sunday morning, Angelo Carriero joining you as every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. And got a lot to talk about today. Obviously, we're going to talk about Kentucky's huge win against Tennessee in Knoxville yesterday, the first win in Knoxville since 1984. I'm going to give you my NFL picks and a couple other tidbits of pieces of news, but I want to begin today with a segment that I like to call The Way I See It, and anybody that listens to this show is very familiar with that. But I didn't get to talk about the NBA Finals with the Los Angeles Lakers winning and it becoming Anthony Davis's first championship, Rajon Rondo's second. He's the first ever Los Angeles Laker and Boston Celtic to win a ring. I know there was Clyde Levesque who did it in Minneapolis, but the first Los Angeles and Boston player to win a ring. And all that's very exciting. But I think always the big news with that that over encompasses the basketball landscape, or at least in the NBA, is LeBron James. And where he stands now after his fourth ring and fourth finals MVP, and to get down into the whole GOAT conversation with Michael Jordan and how much of a topic everybody loves that. So this is the way that I see it. LeBron James had a phenomenal performance throughout the entire playoffs, really going back to that Portland series. Everybody said, oh, you know, LeBron James and the team, they're not ready for these they're not ready for these Trailblazers. The Trailblazers are on fire. They can't match the three-point shooting. Trailblazers are going to win. Charles Barkley said, sweep them. Well, it went five games. And everybody said going into the series against Houston, well, not maybe not everybody, but I know that I did. I said that the Rockets, their three-point shooting was going to take Los Angeles out. As Los Angeles lost their first game against Portland, won four in a row. They lost by 15 to Houston. I was like, you know what? That's exactly the way that I think this series is going to go. They're going to get outshot from three-point range. And then Frank Vogel adjusted. And that series was essentially over pretty much after that third game. It seemed like there was really no hope. And they went past the Rockets and then it comes into Orlando. I was going to say comes into town, but, you know, everything's inside of the bubble. In comes the Denver Nuggets, Jamal Murray having a historic postseason, Nikola Jokic being an absolute stud going against LeBron James and Anthony Davis. I think this was the series, as much as people liked the Denver Nuggets, you're not going to beat LeBron James and Anthony Davis with Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray. As good as those guys are, and as good as the supporting cast with Denver was, you're not going to beat them. They lost one more game. So three losses, 12 wins going into the NBA Finals. And everybody liked this Miami Heat team, and they started off the first quarter of Game 1 pretty well. Lakers won by 18. And then from there, obviously, there was the heroic Jimmy Butler game in Game 5, but the Lakers proceeded to blow out the Heat. Poor Tyler Hero, poor Bam Adebayo, after their phenomenal Eastern Conference Finals showing, they did not have a great NBA Finals. But again, like the story is every time in the NBA Finals in the 2010s, save for when Kawhi Leonard faces off against Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, and Klay Thompson in the NBA Finals last year, it's all about LeBron James. And it's about LeBron James and his standing and where he ranks and this and that. LeBron James had one of the, and it's not going to be considered one of these classic NBA Finals performances, but it should be. And the reason why is because in the NBA Finals, LeBron James, in 39.4 minutes a game, shot 59.1% from the field, including 41.7% from three on six attempts a game, which is elite level three-point shooting, coming from a guy that back it before when he was in Miami and even before then in his first run with Cleveland, oh, the guy can't shoot. Well, he's absolutely developed into a phenomenal three-point shooter, at least in the NBA Finals he has. He can bring it out when he wants to. He was almost a triple-double, 29.8 points, so essentially 30 points per game, 11.8 rebounds, so essentially a 30-12 with 8.5 assists a game after leading the NBA in assists in the regular season, which, my goodness, man, like, first time he'd ever done that, it just so happens to be in his 17th season, just because he does what he wants to do when he wants to do it, and he had 1.2 steals to top it all off. So LeBron James wins the finals MVP, and that makes it 4 NBA championships and 4 finals MVPs for LeBron James. Why is that important? Well, my friend Paul Abels is a big Michael Jordan guy, and there will not be a day where he really puts LeBron James over Michael Jordan, and that's fine. He grew up a Michael Jordan fan. That's his guy, and you know, you go 6-0 with 6 finals MVPs, not seen ever. That's never been done. The only person even close, and they didn't have the finals MVP. That's why they named the freaking award after the guy, because of how good he was. And we will get to him here in a little bit. But this kind of pushes LeBron James into that true tier. Now, anybody that watches LeBron James knows that he's one of the greatest basketball players to ever live. But his accolades, when in comparison to his peers, and if you include scoring titles and all that, it's really a little closer than you'd think, at least before this championship. You look at Larry Bird, 3 rings, 3 MVPs, where LeBron James had 4 MVPs, 3 rings. You had Magic Johnson with his 5 rings, 3 MVPs. You had guys like Tim Duncan, who had a back-to-back MVP. He had 5 rings. He had, I believe, 3 finals MVPs. On his resume, and I honestly think he should have had a 4th for 2007 because he was the best player, even though you could argue, well, I guess the NBA writers argued that Tony Parker was the most valuable player of that finals. But there were guys. There are guys, historic guys, to be fair, but guys that are in that air with LeBron. And honestly, a good comparison my friend made was that, well, Wilt Chamberlain was a guy to compare to LeBron. A guy that's a phenomenal athlete, even for his time, always just outperforming the opponent, but in racking up the MVPs. But, you know, Wilt only had 2 championships, even though he had been to a lot of finals. And that's kind of the pace that LeBron was going on. He was staring down the potential of going 3-7 in the NBA Finals. And that would kind of mirror a lot of what Wilt Chamberlain done, and maybe pushing him down to more of that level. Well, this 4th finals MVP and 4th ring kind of makes him belong in that other company with Tim Duncan, with Magic Johnson, and really you can even argue superseding that. As good of teammates as LeBron's had, you know, he didn't have Kareem, or that Tim Duncan, you know, 2 MVPs and 3 finals MVPs is good, but 4 league MVPs and 4 final MVPs, just a smidge better. So then you look at guys and also in that tier like Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant, 5 rings, 2 finals MVPs, 1 regular season MVP. I think that you could kind of put LeBron over that. And then another guy that was more in that Larry Bird tier of guys would be like Shaquille O'Neal. He only had 1 regular season MVP, but I think a lot of people agree that Shaquille O'Neal for about half a decade was as dominant as a basketball player that the NBA has ever seen for a stretch, and a guy that I consider to be the 6th greatest NBA player to ever play. LeBron James has moved himself up now in accolades to where you can start at least on that side. Just accolades is all I'm talking about. That you can start to put him in that tier of what I think is the Mount Goatmore. It is the Mount Rushmore for NBA players that I consider to be a very, very solid and defined class of 4 guys that are in the GOAT conversation. There's Michael Jordan, the 10-time scoring champion, the 6-time finals MVP, 6 championships, 5 regular season MVPs. Which is crazy to think about, because one of them wasn't even when he won a championship. So in two of the 6 years that he won the championship, he was not the MVP. That would be Charles Barkley and Karl Malone in 2 of those years. 2 guys that Michael Jordan prevented from getting NBA championships. You've got Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, six-time MVP, six-time champion, only two times finals MVP, but I think that some people can argue, especially when Magic Johnson got his in his rookie year, that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was the best player in that series. And then there's also other examples of Kareem going to the finals with the Bucks, in which he lost. I believe he lost to the Celtics in 74, maybe 75. I think it was 74. But Kareem, all-time leading scorer, still to this day, no one has passed him. Unstoppable shot, most all-star appearances, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and even defensively. The guy was out of college, the best player in the league, and was the best player in the league for about a decade and a half. He really was, for about a decade and a half. You can maybe cut it a little short in the 80s, but he was still the best NBA player for a long time. Maybe even longer than you can say LeBron James, but I think that could be argued. Bill Russell, 11-time champion. This is what always frustrates me when it comes to the rings argument. Because Bill Russell has the 11 championships, but oh, it's the era, it's this and that. Well, it's funny because in his era, they said, well, there are fewer teams. Well, yeah, that means the talent is more concentrated. Imagine if you cut the NBA today in half and the amount of superstar power would be on each and every NBA team. It'd be absolutely ridiculous. And Bill Russell, even though he wasn't a great scorer, and no, he wasn't, but he was the Michael Jordan of defense. If you go to basketballreference.com, you can see that his defensive win shares are among, honestly, I think he had a stretch of like 8 years straight where he was the defensive win shares leader, and he had like, what was it, 9 out of 10 years or 10 out of 11, where he was the top defensive win share guy in the league. He is the greatest defensive basketball player to ever play in the NBA, full stop. And he had 5 MVPs, and he had the Finals MVP award named after him. For those that don't think, and I even have friends, a guy, Chad Pruitt, that I talk about here, he thinks that Bill Russell isn't even in top 10. And I just can't stand the argument, because you can't just devalue what a guy did because he wasn't a scorer or because of the era. Now, like George Mikan, when it was the first 2 years of the NBA, I can see. But the NBA was established enough to where you did have Wilt Chamberlain. You did have Bob Pettit. You did have Jerry Lucas. You did have Willis Reed there in the beginning of the 70s. Even Kareem there at the beginning of the 70s, even though they didn't intersect. But you have those three guys. And now firmly entrenched into Mount Goatmore is LeBron James. 4 MVPs, 4 finals MVPs, 4 rings. And he has been to the finals 10 times. And that includes 9 out of the last 10 NBA finals with a surprise appearance from a very plucky Cavaliers team, a.k.a. LeBron carried that sorry team to the NBA finals. Where LeBron now has a resume that can be put up in that class. But I don't think that he's the GOAT yet. That's the thing. I do think that he can become the GOAT. I honestly think a three-peat with these Lakers team, and that's lofty. That's lofty. But having a partner like Anthony Davis makes that a realistic thing, especially after what we just saw in the bubble. And Anthony Davis having a tremendous series in the bubble against the Heat and against every team. He's just an unbelievable, unstoppable force. But I think that he does need to at least, I think if he gets another championship, he is forever, like, I think you just have to consider with as many, that would make 11 finals, 5 championships, 4 MVPs. Let's see if he wins another one. You know, we don't know. We'll see if he does. But it would put him to me right there to where it'll be an eternal debate. Whereas I think that if he wins 6, but especially a three-peat, that it kind of closes the book that LeBron James will go down as the greatest player of all time. But I think you could put any of those 4 guys up there. Michael Jordan is, I believe that you could consider the front runner for that. But Bill Russell's right there. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's right there. And LeBron James, no worse than the 4th best player to ever play in the NBA. And though I don't think that he's the GOAT right now, I do think that we can see a day where LeBron James is considered the greatest NBA player to ever play. And that's the way I see it. Coming up here after the break, I will talk about the Kentucky-Tennessee game, and we'll get into other, like I said, little tidbits, pieces of news. Remember my NFL picks at the end of the show, and at 1 o'clock. We're going to have NFL games going on right here. So stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. This is Angelo Care, Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM, and streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com. Right now, I'm the man. Yesterday is the song. Back here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM, streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com. Angelo Carriero with you here on this Sunday morning. I got to tell you, one thing about me that I want you all to know is that getting into sports radio, getting into the sports business, I've tried to find a balance and between being professional and being kind of a fan. Because I didn't go to some great journalism school. I'm not some insider with sources and whatnot. I'm a guy like just like everyone else out there, and I hope that everybody can find a way to at least, you know, if not agree with my sports opinions, at least know that I put a lot of time and effort into what I'm talking about, and kind of being able to relate like anybody else to just a guy that loves sports. And I try to come with a critical eye to it, and you'll hear me a lot of times say Kentucky instead of we. And a lot of that is just me trying to practice essentially what being a professional is all about. You know, trying to play it down the middle, even though obviously it's a Lexington market. I got to tell you guys, yesterday it's the fan in me absolutely came out. For Kentucky football. For those that don't know, my first team that I ever fell in love with was Kentucky football. And I always blame my papaw for that, because he took me to these Kentucky football games right when Kentucky was great. Kentucky football was great. And Kentucky basketball was more on a, let's just say, a downslide. The brunt of my molding and shaping into a Kentucky basketball fan was late era Tubby Smith and the entire Gillespie era. That was it. By the time I left out of high school, that was when Cal came, but I was already pretty much formed by then. I mean, think about it. The first Kentucky basketball game that I ever really remember watching was when Kentucky was the number one seed and lost to UAB in the second round with the Twins. So just to imagine, it was just all... When I say downhill, I don't mean that in a good way. I mean, it was downhill to the pit of the worst, really the worst era in Kentucky basketball history once Gillespie came around. Really, really rough during that time. But I had Kentucky football, because that was when Coach Rich Brooks and obviously Coach Steve Ortmeyer, who was on the UK Game Day pregame show with me yesterday and was nice enough to call into my postgame show yesterday, and I really appreciate that from Coach. But I became a very impassioned and very just focused on University of Kentucky football. And obviously, over the years, that's a very up and down experience. Like, why I couldn't have been a Kentucky basketball fan, like, more than football. It's just football is my favorite sport. It's my love. It's my passion number one is UK football. And that's what I want to be known for at the end of the day when it comes to, like, sports fandom is, like, yeah, he loves the Cubs. Yeah, he loves the Packers. Yeah, he loves, you know, Kentucky basketball. But Kentucky football, that's the one that really gets my juices going. I'll tell you what, the fan came out of me yesterday to see Kentucky. And y'all have to understand, I've got friends that I consider family that are all University of Tennessee fans. And all they ever have done is give me crap. That's all they've ever done is give me crap, because they know how big of a Kentucky football fan I am, and they know that Tennessee completely owned Kentucky football for a very long time until the beginning of the 2010s, which, you know, Coach Joker Phillips, he was a great man, did not do great things for the program while he was the head coach. But one thing that he did do is he broke the streak. And then Coach Stoops comes in with Steven Johnson in a big time win, where really it made me feel good about the conditions of this rivalry between Kentucky and Tennessee, is when Coach Stoops and the team beat them back in 2017. But you look at 2018, and coming off of that loss to Georgia and expecting to really beat the brakes off Tennessee, really make it back-to-back years, losing 24-7 in a truly ghastly fashion. Like, one where you say that losing to Tennessee as a Kentucky fan should never be shocking, But that result shocked me. And then to come back last year, Lynn Bowden, you know, Garantino comes in and mop up, and not mop up. I keep wanting to say mop up duty. It's not mop up. Mop up duty is where I won't get into it. Mop up duty and backup duty are not the same thing. He comes in and he has a great game to finish off. Lynn Bowden gets stopped at the one. We all know how that goes. We all know how that went. But this year, going to Neyland, I talked to Coach Ort before the game and I said, Coach, I know that you think I'm a pessimist, and I'm not. I just like to be critical. That's the thing. When I say I want to be a professional in this business, I want to be critical. I want to see everything. I don't want to put my blue and white shades on, and I didn't. And I still picked Kentucky to win, and I got to tell you what, I did not see it in that fashion. I did not see Kentucky beating Tennessee, beating the absolute breaks off of the Tennessee Volunteers yesterday. And I got to tell you, it brought out that kid in me. It brought out the kid that was there for in Commonwealth when Kentucky beat Matt Stafford, and my older brother Seth wouldn't let me storm the field. My papa wouldn't either. They wouldn't let me storm the field. Too young, even though everybody else got to. I was so excited. We had the best seats in the house that game. We were on the upper part of the lower level, which is where you can see everything and still have a kind of a bird's eye view of the game. I was there in the upper deck of the Kentucky-Louisville game where Brian Braum and Michael Bush came in. I think they were ranked number 9 in the country. They were going to push for the BCS National Championship game. Audre Woodson threw up that pass to Stevie Johnson, and that was it. That was it. Put up the wings Stevie Johnson put up. And then I was also there among all a lot of other games. I was there for the Bluegrass Miracle as a young kid. That's my first Kentucky football memory, was the Bluegrass Miracle, which is a terrible name for a game that Kentucky lost, and it's called the Bluegrass Miracle. Kentucky didn't even get the miracle. It was freaking LSU. Devery Henderson. I will never forget that as long as I live. My papa taught me a very valuable lesson that day. He said, it's never over until it's over. And that's funny coming from a man. That was wise words coming from a man that calls games in the first quarter because he doesn't like how it's going. He's the pessimist. If you want to blame anybody, you got to blame him on that one for some of those. But this game, really, it was after the second interception. Coach Ortmeyer wanted me to do it. I'll give a shout out. Kevin Joseph, good interception yesterday. Shouldn't have shoved that guy in the back on the first play of the game. That's no reason to do that when he wasn't looking. But you know what? You played well. I'm not going to take that away from you, young man. And the Jamin Davis pick, though, when it looked like he was about to fall, it looked like he almost wanted to go down so he didn't run himself to death. And this is a quote. He said he, quote, ran his balls off. to get down there. I'm guessing he said meant footballs. And it was just so funny. But after that, I was like, man, like that's big time. That's pretty cool. And I was getting excited. And then Tyrell Agin coming in for that third intercept. Three consecutive drives ending in interceptions for the Volunteers. I the fan came out in me. 17-0. Tennessee scored. It was down. So it's 17-7 at half, and that's when people say, like, oh, you know, it's going to turn in the second half. They've got momentum. This is how the second half went. Tennessee had four drives. Punt, 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 turnover on downs. Kentucky, touchdown, field goal, touchdown, end of game. And that's how that game yesterday was defined. A 34-7 slaughtering of the Volunteers in front, in the Coliseum of Neyland Stadium. Just absolutely slaughtered their team in front of them. Tennessee got frustrated. Coaching staffs got frustrated. And really, what I was most impressed about was the way that Kentucky ended the game yesterday. It was that Tennessee's first three drives amounted to essentially, and again, I'm doing this rough hand, about 4 minutes, a little under 4 minutes and 30 seconds. In their first three drives of the second half, they only had four. The first three drives of the second half, they had the ball a total of 4.5 minutes. Kentucky's first drive that ended in a touchdown in the second half was 5 minutes and 49 seconds. Came down on that field goal drive, 3 minutes and 57 seconds. that seven-play, 54-yard drive that ended up in a touchdown, 3 minutes, 58 seconds, and to end the game, which I thought was the most fitting, was the most, this rivalry is a thing now, the losses are in the past, this is what it is. 11 plays, 65 yards, 7 minutes, 19 seconds, didn't have to punt, didn't have to score, didn't have to do anything. Look at the clock, game over. And that's what brought it out for me. That game, as much as I want to come on here and be a critical, get the respect of everyone. If you hate Kentucky, if you hate this, you hate that, and I give you a look, you're going to respect it. And if you love Kentucky, you know I got love for them. But what I tell you, you know that I believe it, and that I would never say anything that is in it to degrade the program. I like I said, anybody that thinks Coach Stoops shouldn't be there is a nincompoop to me. He is a great coach. He is great for this program, great for the team. Terry Wilson, you know, I do think that eventually I'd like to see a quarterback platoon system, but he's good enough to play. Those legs move. They really do, and that's a big threat, especially with the lead. I really like that they're able to run. I mean, like, think about it. It was one of the cappers. There on that last touchdown drive, just ran out of bounds at like the 6-yard line, ripped off a big run. It was it. Demoralized Tennessee. Kentucky absolutely demoralized Tennessee yesterday. And I, as much as I try to give a view that everybody that listens to this station and that listens to me can respect because of the way that I try to look at the game, the fan came out in me yesterday. I absolutely loved it. 34-7, Kentucky at Neyland. It's going to be exciting to see what this team has going forward. So they play Missouri next week, a little switch of the schedule, and then on Halloween face Georgia at noon. I'm excited for that Georgia game now, or maybe as I wouldn't have been, now I am. All right, after this, I'm going to give you a little bit of news tidbits. Stay tuned, of course, for the end of the show where I give you my NFL picks, including my lock of the week, and we'll get it rolling. Hope you're enjoying this as much as I am this Sunday morning. It's Angelo Carriero on ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM, and streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com. All right, back here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM, streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com. Angelo Carriero with you, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time in this segment because I don't really get to take a lot of I don't get to take a longer time in my NFL picks as much as I want to because I talk and I talk and I talk, as you all know. And I get to my NFL picks and I kind of have to run through them. So I want to take a little more time on those today. So I just kind of want to go around the bluegrass when it comes to high school football because, as most of you all know, I'm the play-by-play announcer for our high school football program here, Varsity Game Night, which you can hear every Friday evening up until the KHSAA finals here in Lexington, and we like to bring you a game of the week every week, and we've had some really good ones so far this year, and we were at Dunbar for the first time, and I can't remember how long, and I know that Josh Toffness disagrees, and if you listen to the broadcast on Friday, I even got a tweet from Toff to Joffness, maybe his burner account, maybe not, I haven't gotten down to the bottom of that, but saying that we had been, but I don't think we had, and it was good to be back, because Coach Johnson has Dunbar up and rolling again. As much as I expected Coach Gay to with Henry Clay, and he did have him rolling there in the beginning, and even coming out with a 7-0 win last week against Lafayette, but Dunbar beat Henry Clay 20-0. A lot like Mississippi State, Henry Clay's offense kind of imploded, and it'll be interesting to see what Coach Gay does to kind of turn that offense around. But boy, Dunbar looked really good. And I really like their quarterback, Jake Smith. I like Dulonga, who had an insane sequence of events where coming into that game, he was averaging 43.2 yards per catch, which is just mind-numbing. And there was a double reverse. The guy threw an interception and then turned around and got the interception back on the very next possession. So the kid's a baller. And Mason Haislett made a lot of plays that I like to see. And then, of course, our own number 8, Olive, Craig's son, in that game for Dunbar. But Shaheem Drew was our central bank player of the game, a kid with a lot of good – he was just very good. He has good core strength. He was very impressive, and he looks like he's kind of emerging as that reliable receiver. And that will be fun to see, because Lafayette got their first win against Tate's Creek 22-13. And I've already got confirmation that Varsity Game Night will be at Lafayette, or as Matthew likes to say, the Yet, who also has a son that plays on Lafayette. So we'll have a battle of LM Communications employees' sons on Friday as the Bulldogs visit the Lafayette Generals, the Dunbar Bulldogs Lafayette Generals, Friday on Varsity Game Night at 6:30 p.m. So we're excited for that. You don't want to miss it. A couple other scores. Lexington Catholic defeated Bourbon County 52-0. Lexington Christian snuck out a win 28-21. And another guy, if you like to hear what we have to say about high school football, then you'll also love Brian Kennedy. If you follow him on Twitter, he does a great job with his high school blitz that he does for ABC 36. He's a friend of mine. He's been a friend of the program, and he's just a solid all around guy. And he has great high school football coverage here in Lexington and around the Bluegrass. And Bryan Station defeated Oldham County in a thriller, 25-20, on Friday. And the last piece of note is that Frederick Douglass' game was canceled due to COVID. So we hope to see the Broncos back on the field shortly. All right, I'm going to get out of the way so I can do my NFL picks at the moment. Hope you enjoyed some high school football right around the corner. 5-0 in my lock of the week. So if you are a survivor pool, I do a different team every week. I'm doing the survivor pool with you. And if you've been riding with your boy Angelo, you know that you've got at least 5 weeks into the season. I'm going to make it six. Stay tuned right here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5 FM, streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com with my NFL picks for week six. Just go at it. Welcome back to ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5 FM. Angelo Carriero with you here Sunday morning, and it's time for my NFL picks and to give you all an update of how I've been performing this year. Pretty good so far. I'm not even going to lie. I'm pretty happy with my start overall. 51-24 and one overall. I was going to say 51-42 is not going to be very good, and I think that's way too many games. But 51-24 and one overall. I'm 5-0 of locks of the week, and that's using all different teams. So if you're in a survivor pool, this might be something to look forward to, as I've already picked New England, San Francisco, Tampa Bay, Baltimore, and Dallas weeks 1-5 in terms of winning their game for sure. And 51-24 so far, not too bad. So that makes me think that I'm about to slip up this week, as I'm actually going to do a quick mathematical on this one. So bear with me for just a moment. It is a winning percentage. I'm taking out the tie right now, and it's my former football number, 68% winning percentage so far. So let's get down to it, and let's see if we can get a winner out of this week as well. So let's start off with the first game, Houston at Tennessee. I'm really worried about Tennessee coming off of that Tuesday night game in which they just destroyed the Bills, because that's a really quick turnaround for a team, even though Tennessee will be at home for the second straight week. Houston, I'll believe it when I see it. And I know division games are tougher, but Houston right now giving up a ton of first downs on rushes. Defense looks great. I'm going to take Tennessee in that game at home. Cincinnati at Indianapolis. I know that a lot of people are discouraged from the butt whooping that Cincinnati got against Baltimore. Jim Irsay came on Twitter and said this game is a go. I think there were some COVID worries when it came to this game. Well, there were some. I don't think there were. There were some COVID worries. I'm going to take Indianapolis in this game, and I know that's not going to be very popular, but I think the Colts have proven to have a really strong defense, and offensively, even though Cincinnati's defense is quietly kind of creeping up in performance, according to, I think, at least PFF, but, you know, who knows with that. I'll take Indianapolis in this one. I'll take the home team. I think their defense is going to be tough, and they're going to keep rolling through their season. So two home teams, and I'm going to make it a third. Atlanta at Minnesota. and this is another COVID worry game. And by the way, if any of these games get COVID, or if I haven't seen this morning, if there has been a cancellation, you know, I haven't been on Twitter much this morning, coming right in and doing the show. So if there is, I will update that on Twitter. I'm going to take Minnesota at home over Atlanta. The coaching change there in Atlanta, I know that that can kind of mess up betting odds and whatnot, but I think Minnesota, even though they found a way to blow that game against Seattle, I think they're going to come back this week and get a win. Fourth consecutive home team in this one, Denver at New England. New England all the way. Denver is going to be without Noah Fant. They're going to be without Melvin Gordon, who just got a DUI recently, and they said he had an illness, but I'm not sure if this is kind of a quasi-suspension, and I'm not sure on that one. Not speculating or anything, just saying correlation there. I'm going to take New England. I think that defense is going to be tough. They should be getting Cam Newton back. It's at home for New England, 1 o'clock game. I'll take the Patriots in that contest. Washington at the Giants. With the quarterback change, by the way, I wanted to make a comment on that. I didn't think Dwayne Haskins was good in the draft. And you all know how big I am about the NFL draft and when it comes to my evaluations. And look, when it comes to players, everybody's a hit and miss when it comes to the NFL draft. It's an inexact science, and I think that's pretty obvious for anybody that follows. I will say that when it comes, I'm better at picking guys I don't think are going to pan out than the NFL than sometimes I do when it comes to guys that'll hit. And I just did not think, I was not a Dwayne Haskins believer. And I think a lot of people are pointing to this example of Daniel Jones getting a long time starting versus Dwayne Haskins. Two completely different situations, and also I just don't think Dwayne Haskins is the guy. He could have stayed longer in college, or maybe he never had it in the first place, even though he was a first-round pick. They're making the switch over to Kyle Allen, or they did last week, and he got hurt, so we'll see the Kyle Allen, Alex Smith, as he got his first snaps. I'm actually going to take Washington at New York. I've been really disappointed in the Giants, because I thought I thought Daniel Jones was going to have a pretty good year this year. Even if it was turnover laden, I thought he was going to have a lot of success when it came to just the overall sheer offensive output. And I have not seen that from New York this year. And I'll tell you what, this defensive staff with Washington and Ron Rivera, it's not a joke. And they're not going to be for the rest of the year. I will take Washington on the road against the New York Giants. Let's look here. This is an interesting contest because I think betting odds-wise in Baltimore at Philadelphia, I think Philadelphia is a big game team. And I know that sounds weird. I'm not saying that Philadelphia is a good team. They have a lot of holes. They have a lot of injuries. And they're going to be out without a lot of offensive linemen. But that's nothing new for Philadelphia this year. I at home for Philadelphia, I think Baltimore will win. So I will take Baltimore in this game. But I will say that I think if you're betting the cover, Philadelphia might be a good pick when covering this game. But Lamar Jackson, this Baltimore team, so tough. And I'm not 100% sure on the betting line. I will say that that would be favorable, but I'm going to take Baltimore in this contest. Cleveland at Pittsburgh. They reel me back in every single time. They reel me back in, and I never can understand why. But the Cleveland Browns look good, and they always happen to look good, and they always end up disappointing in some way or another. And this game's going to be no different for me because I'm going to pick the Browns at the Steelers. And I know that is going to be probably a loser of a pick, but you know what? I got to go with what I've been seeing. You got to go with your gut sometimes. And I think that this Cleveland running game and this improved defense, remember, this is going to be a big rivalry game from now on with the Myles Garrett situation, who's turned into one of the three best defenders, arguably, in all of football this year. I'm going to take the Cleveland Browns. Chicago at, and I think, I know Carolina looks good, and I think a lot of that's from the passing game. Christian McCaffrey being out still. I don't think he's going to be back today, but I'll check the injury report after this, before kickoff. I will say, I do think the pass defense road picks for me after I picked four straight home picks in this arena. Detroit at Jacksonville, what a toss-up. I know that Jacksonville's playing well. I'm pained to think that Detroit with Matt Patricia is going to slip up in this game, but it's very possible. Trust me, the Detroit's so Jekyll and Hyde. They're kind of like the NFC version of the Browns, at least the from what I had last year. I'll take the Lions at Jacksonville. Jets at Dolphins. Jets riding high off of that San Francisco win. I'm not sure if they're going to be able to roll it over into this game, but the Jets are very, very bad. I'm not 100% confident. I think this can be a close game in the division. I'm going to say that Miami's going to squeak this one out at home, so I'm going to take the Dolphins. Big game for me as a Packers fan, but just as well as it's the Fox game of the week, Green Bay at Tampa Bay. It seems like a lot of people think that Tampa Bay are going to take this one from Green Bay and give them their first loss in the year after losing Vita Vea for the season. And just with the way the Packers are on, I say, in the words of Stone Cold Steve Austin, or in the sounds of Stone Cold Steve Austin, I'm going to take the Green Bay Packers on the road against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Los Angeles Rams at the San Francisco 49ers. The Rams look good. The 49ers do not. Will Jimmy Garoppolo come back for this game? How will the running game be? I'm going to pick this safe. I'm still a believer in San Francisco, but if I want to have a great record this year in picking, so I'm going to go the safe route, and you can call it playing the cards too tight to the vest, but I'm going to take the Rams in this one on Sunday night. Going into the matchups on Monday night, and again, if anything changes with COVID, we'll know here in a little bit. Kansas City at Buffalo, 5 p.m. I'm pretty sure that Kansas City is going to win this game. In fact, now that I look at this and I'm starting to really break this down, I'm going to take Kansas City on the road, finally getting the Kansas City Chiefs after I so boldly proclaimed the week. That they would go undefeated this year, which obviously did not work out very well for me. I'm going to pick Kansas City because I think the Buffalo defense is a shell of what they were last year. Patrick Mahomes and that offense are going to get rolling. It's a battle of Patrick Mahomes versus Josh Allen, who, you know, funny story, could come up and get Patrick Mahomes, and that led, so the Chiefs could come up and get Patrick Mahomes, and that led to what we saw, obviously, with the MVP, Super Bowl MVP for Patrick Mahomes. But Josh Allen looks great this year. By the way, the remnants of that trade were the trade down, and with those first-round picks, they got the Bills got Tre'Davious White and Tremaine Edmonds on top of drafting Josh Allen with the seventh pick in 2018. And I know a lot of people prefer Patrick Mahomes, but that is not a bad haul if you're the Buffalo Bills. So this will be a fun game, but I'm taking Kansas City as my lock of the week this week on Monday night at 5. And the last game, Arizona, I think it'll be interesting coming out. Be interesting coming toss up because if this was in Arizona, I would take Arizona. In Dallas, it makes me want to take the Cowboys, but you know what? I'm going with the gut. Kyler Murray right here, being a Texas guy in high school, being a part of what's considered sometimes as the greatest team in Texas football history, I just think that it's going to be a fun homecoming. DeAndre Hopkins is going to have a big game. I'm going the Arizona Cardinals at Jerry World. So that's it for me this Sunday morning. I hope you all enjoyed the show. Those are my picks. Again, lock of the record comes out. State football at Buffalo, and we'll see how the record comes out. Stay tuned to the rest of the programming that we have today. A lot of NFL football right here, and the only place for NFL football in Lexington and Central Kentucky is on ESPN Sports Radio 1392.5. Don't forget, the Bengals game will be on our sister station, 92.1 Classic Rock. But like I said, you want NFL games of all caliber, you stay right here, ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5.